Welcome to O2 Coaching's Empower Your Team podcast series with your host, Chloe Caron, founder and president of O2 Coaching. As an executive coach, author, businesswoman, thought leader, and speaker with more than 20 years of experience, Chloe's USC, her unique strategic contribution, is to create a new generation of inspiring and inspired leaders by positively impacting the lives of 1 million leaders through her webinars, conferences, books, and podcasts. In this podcast series, Chloe and her guests will take you on a journey, sharing their leadership stories, struggles, successes, and learnings. The conversations will highlight practical advice and insights for leaders. Be sure to share your thoughts on this podcast series on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. Enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, Empower Your Team. Last week, we had Jan-Frédéric Pleszynski, and we talked about empathy, we talked about vulnerability, and how pertinent it is to actually take a moment and think about our own empathy for towards ourselves and towards others in this context. So if you haven't listened, go ahead, please do. And this week we have Sarah Leclerc, Global Marketing Director at GSK, a dear friend of mine. She's the founding executive of WLP, Women Leaders in Pharma. She is one of my dear friends, as I mentioned, and she is one of the leaders that I know that is really, really, really a great coach. A great leader coach. Sarah is using every tools in her toolbox to be a better leader coach. She's a great visionary, but she's also a great coach, which means she listens, which means she challenges, which means she uses powerful questions, which means she creates that accountability towards her team, and she really focuses on developing her team. So if you want in any way, shape, or form, enhance your ability to be a better leader coach, I invite you, I really do, to listen to this podcast and take some notes as always. And as always, I invite you to be inspiring and to inspire. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. This week, I'm so excited to have my friend, Sarah Leclerc, who is someone I've grown over the years as a leader, and I've learned so much from her that I'm so excited that you get the chance to hear from her, her story, her challenges, her successes. She's had many. But before we get to speak with her, let me just say hi. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Sarah is a global marketing director at GSK, but prior to that, you were the GM for the Canadian business of Vive, a business specialized in HIV, and you were there for a couple of years, and you and I had the chance to work together as you were there, and I remember you speaking about patients with such passion that I'm curious to know how you feel now that you are away from that business.
So I think it's like anything you fall in love with, you know, it'll always keep a really important place in your heart. And so I don't think you ever fully leave a business like HIV. I don't think you ever look at the world the same way again. But I think what it taught me and what I carry with me, regardless of what I do, is the voices of the people that we serve. And just reminding me how everything we do has such a big impact on the lives of so many. And I think that having experienced that within the HIV world, you know, those voices and those stories, humanity stays with me. And that's really what I think motivates me and helps me really identify what I want next as well, as I always want that feeling and that motivation and that passion. And that direct contact with helping people and helping real life. Sometimes it's a bit of, you know, we can see things as almost a caricature. And I think it's about seeing real people and looking at the meaningful impact that we have on people. And that stays with me, and that growth was tremendous. And I continue to grow from it today because of that mindset.
there's so many questions I want to ask you because you talk about growth. When I think of you as a leader, I think of a couple of things, and growth and development are definitely part of that. You've had such an amazing career, starting as a rep, really, almost 20 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. And you grew your career over the years in such a way. I'm curious to know what you had to learn the most over the years.
I think we learn the most. You know, what's incredible is I always feel like I'm learning. I feel like, you know, it's even more fun and more growth than school was in many ways. I think there's everything that I've done since I finished university and when I started with GSK as a rep at the time has been like school on steroids. I mean, it's just the amount of opportunity that we have to learn and stretch and grow and to go into different areas of the business. It's like constant business school, which is fascinating. And so I think that what I take with me the most is that sense of curiosity, that I'm always a learner and that I'm always becoming. You know, I don't think I have a finite mindset to look at I've gotten somewhere. In fact, I continue to think and I continue to have the impression that I'm just getting started. And I think that that's probably what's so much fun about doing new challenges and facing new businesses is that constant growth mindset and the feeling very fortunate to work for a company that provides that growth and that opportunity to always learn something new, to be able to speak our minds, to be able to make mistakes. It's so important to have a safe setting to be able to really learn. And you know, I guess that's why I am still with GSK so many years later.
And so your own growth, you really own it, obviously. You mentioned finite mindset. You state Simon Sinek. That was a Simon Sinek quote.
It was actually, intentionally.
But that's just to show that you read a lot, you're really interested in that, you're really curious, and you're also very passionate about supporting your teams to grow and your people to grow. And I've seen you evolve in such an amazing leader coach. And you've had such great impact with that mindset and that posture, if you will, as a leader. I'm curious what kind of journey you had to go through to become that leader coach. We're not born leader coaches, obviously. What did you have to do to think, had to change maybe in order to become that leader coach?
So I think that you're not born a leader coach, but I think that there are certain elements that you can tap into from yourself to help you be a better coach. You know, I think naturally I've always cared a lot for people. And I think being a coach is just that. It's about caring. It's about looking at their wanting them to succeed and wanting to for people to reach their full potential. I think there's a part of me that always also liked helping others. You know, even when I was in school, I was the one who was helping my friends with homework and tutoring them, not officially, just unofficially. And so I've always had a genuine sense of joy when I see somebody be able to do something for the first time. So I think for me, when I thought about being a coach, I was able to frame it on those two things that are really important to me. And for me, it was almost a permission for me to be able to give myself the space to step back and not have all the answers and tell myself, actually, I'm helping that person a lot more if I step back and I don't give them the answers. And the wonderful part of that is that most of the time people actually come up with a way better answer or solution than I could have come up with. And I think that that's where we've done a lot of our best work, has been just trusting those that we work with. And I say work with because it's not always the people that report to me. I think you can coach anyone. And letting their best ideas and their best potential come out. And that's how I think we really succeed. It's not when my ideas get implemented across the whole team.
What's been hard for you in terms of growing into that leader coach? I mean, obviously you've got that full skill set required for that, but there must have been something that you felt like, that's a bit more difficult. And how did you go about in achieving that regardless?
Well, I think the hardest is probably when somebody actually doesn't really want to be coached. And I'm sure we've all had that experience. And I'm sure that for a lot of people, it kind of turns you off from being a coach if you get that early in trying to take on that coach hat. And I think that in itself is a really interesting coaching moment, but it is hard because I think there, it's a different type of mindset, and it is uncomfortable to be asked questions to say, what else could you do? What possibilities? In a dream world, how would you picture this? Those types of questions can be incredibly uncomfortable. And there are some people that just don't want to get into that discomfort to grow. But we know we have to get into that level of discomfort to be able to truly grow and to really think. And frankly, some people come in just wanting us to tell them solutions. And I think that there's a good compromise we can have as well then, because it can be exhausting for somebody to be coached. And so I think it's really about also choosing the right moment to coach, because I think it's not always coaching a person. It's depending on the task that they're in. You know, I think I've found that there are times where I maybe went into a coaching mode when actually that person just needed more direction. And I think that's it's an opportunity to take a step back and think about the situation, not just about the person, because I think sometimes we think that a person has a lot of skills and so they don't really need to be told what to do. But if you think about the situation and how much experience they actually have within the situation, you know, it helps you better identify whether or not it was the right opportunity for coaching, or actually maybe I should have taken a different approach. And so, you know, and sometimes somebody is resistant to coaching. There's maybe they just don't want to be coached, but then there's also a part of, did I actually come in with a coaching hat at the right time? And it's so important to listen and respond to everybody that we're working with, you know, and really using the right, I see coaching as a tool. It's not the tool that I use all the time. And it's highly dependent on the context. And there are some times where you kind of go in and you're like, oh, that wasn't the right moment to do coaching. I should have just gone in with, you know, clear direction. They just needed to know what to do. And that's it. And that's all part of learning as well.
You are such a strong believer of that approach as a leadership team, that you actually went and created that format for your leaders to be more leader coaches and to create that culture within your organization. Tell me more about that. What was the trigger for you to say, you know what, we all need as a leadership team to be a bit more leader coaches? And what did you see in terms of impact on the whole organization when that unfolded?
So I think that when I took on the general manager role, I had a relatively young leadership team in the sense where I'm a few people on my team leading people for a very long time, and some people who hadn't been leading people for a very long time at all. And I think as one of the things that we've done really well at GSK historically is really equipping new managers to be able to coach their teams and to be able to have coaching conversations. Because we were part of Veeve Healthcare, some of my team hadn't necessarily received all the training that I had when I became a first line leader. And so I thought it was really important to give opportunity and to sort of set. And I actually thought that it was a great opportunity to not just coach the new folks and train the new folks on coaching model, but also the people that had more experience to create a coaching culture across the company where it wasn't just about managers coaching their teams. My goal was bold, actually. The first one was to train our leaders, new leaders, and to coach. But the second one was also looking at how I could foster a better coaching environment, even within my leadership team, so that folks didn't always have to come to me for coaching, but people could go to each other. My team could go to each other for coaching, and really leverage the skills that I did have in my team of people who were fantastic coaches, and allowing them to learn from each other, allowing them both to grow. And the third step we took was actually looking at it even broader and how to expand that across the company. So it's not just within the leadership team, so that anybody within the team can go and see any leader, feel comfortable being coached, because our team members were in many meetings, not just with their own leadership, but with other leaders. And it was a great opportunity to foster feedback and coaching and learnings, where it didn't always have to be the person that was sort of you were directly reporting to that would provide the feedback and coaching opportunities, but also across the organization. So it becomes normal, where ultimately peers at any level of the organization were starting, we trained them on coaching as well. And so that colleagues were then asking each other to coach them on certain topics. So I think what was great about that, what we were able to achieve over about a year and a half with you, was really looking at creating a safe space where people felt like they were able to share what their intentions were, what their needs were, how they were growing, and they were able to have people all around them supporting them in that growth. And so I think in all working together, when you know what someone's working on, you can give them the feedback, you can help them in that direction. And that was really the intention there. So I saw a lot of really great things coming from the team. Once we instilled that mindset, I think it also allowed people, there was already a very high level of trust. So I think that that can be done, especially in a trusted environment. But the trust just went even higher. And on top of it, I think that people felt like they were able to take more risks as well, because they were able to ask for feedback and they were able to, you know, talk through things and be a lot more open about things that they were working on. So it also created an environment where there was probably more risk-taking than there had been in the past because of that culture. And in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. And this is actually why I've written my book, I think, because when I listen to what you're saying is, as you coach, as a leader, you create that culture of accountability and innovation in the sense that we're willing to do things differently, i.e. not doing the things the same way and taking, to your point, more risks. And this is such an engagement tool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone can feel like they can take on the world and do, you know, what they feel is important for the business. I'm curious what you saw in terms of engagement. So you did say there was a lot of trust, but what did you see in terms of engagement of the organization?
So, you know, I think it was incredibly engaged. I think it was for many reasons. Clearly the coaching culture helped, but I think we already had a very strong engagement to begin with, and the trust in the coaching made it even stronger. What I saw within that engagement were people that were truly aligned to our mission. And, you know, within most meetings that I attended in a day, we would often come as, you know, our goal is to end HIV in Canada. And that was just a very clear direction. It was a very clear focus. A lot of our decisions were based on, well, if our goal is to end HIV in Canada, we should do this. So, you know, that it was alignment on the true north that I think really comes through a coaching culture and mindset. And I think that sense of accountability of what's my role within that, so that you really do feel like you're actually having an impact. It's not just a goal that's set by the company. And I think because of that, you know, you create this bond of like people who have similar values and principles and purpose, who don't think the same, but that actually makes us stronger and having different perspectives and challenging each other. But that challenge brings up incredible things when you have this this magic that's created, and many people actually call this a tribe. You have that magic that's created, then you have such a sense of belonging and such a sense of purpose that it's really hard to leave. So, you know, I do think that engagement, it all goes hand in hand. I think when you really love what you do and you love the people you work with and you love where you're going, then people want to continue to contribute to that dream.
And I'm sure that was a very difficult decision for you to take, but you decided for your own growth and for your own development to leave the tribe and to take your family and bring it to the States. So you were in Canada, you left for the States, and that was a big decision from a personal and professional level, but you did make that decision and now you're in the States. What's been the biggest learning for you as you moved on in different markets, different role?
So I've actually been in two roles since we moved.
You've been what, a year now in the States and you've already had two roles?
So things move quickly. And I think that was one of the extraordinary things about moving and just seeing the opportunity that's out there is phenomenal. So, you know, we had a pandemic that hit the world, and I got a really fantastic call one day to say, hey, do you want to come and start working on our therapeutics to work on new products that could actually help people who are impacted by COVID. So,
congratulations. I did not know that. Wonderful. This is great news. Congratulations, Sarah. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. So, for me, it was just about, again, following my heart and following my passion and my purpose. And again, it goes back to, When you get a call like that that says, you know, do you want to have an impact on how this pandemic will evolve? You know, every bone in my body said yes. So obviously, I talked about it with my family first. But I think it's one of those things where the work that I did previously within the team, you know, all that coaching, all that thinking, it helps you make decisions a lot easier when you know exactly where your purpose is at. So for me, having a real, you know, whether it's ending HIV or putting a dent in this pandemic, it gives you I know that I need a really important reason to get up in the morning, an important reason for me. And feeling that motivation and that excitement every morning to say, we are going to do something extraordinary here. And we are rewriting history is such an amazing opportunity. So it is very different from what I was doing back in Canada, but both of my global roles have allowed me just to see the world in a completely different lens. But I think it's important to know where your passion lies.
And I was speaking with Paul Lorette, a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying how impressed he was that with that purpose of denting that pandemic, everybody came together, not only within the pharmaceutical, but the agencies and the governments, which allowed everybody working so much faster than we would usually do, that this kind of creates the new expectation of us coming together and end some of these disease.
Absolutely. And I think that, again, the parallel is really interesting to HIV, because I think that sometimes out of our horrible situation, loss and a lot of sadness and a lot of lives impacted, it drives to innovation ultimately. And it's a catalyst for things that need to change. And so, you know, I think that we need to think about the impact that we've seen behind us. And again, for the pandemic, I think we need to look at the devastating impact that it's had globally. And, you know, never before have we been a nation where we faced a health crisis, a political crisis, and an economic crisis all at the same time, and the consequences that that has. You know, getting a interesting view on that being in the U.S. right now, and still being one of the countries that's hardest hit with a pandemic. But I do believe that that leads to an impatience and a willingness to change. And I think that this will be a huge catalyst to doing things differently, not just in pharma, but in everything we do. And I think it'll be a huge catalyst for progress. And I think we have to see it that way. And we have to look at that time as not time or lives that were lost for no reason. We have to look at that time and learn the lesson and think, what are we going to do differently moving forward? And for that, I do see it as an interesting parallel with HIV, where the the sense of hope and purpose was always there. And we were always looking forward to see what the next solution was while being respectful and recognizing the history we had lived. And I think that that's a really important lesson here as well, that we, frankly, that we never get ourselves into this situation again, but that we use this as a really important lesson to look at what are we going to do differently moving forward. And if I think about the pharma business in particular, we're completely rewriting the book, you know, and leading this launch. There's no process that we're leaving unchanged. And so what type of proof of concept can you build for the future? And how can we learn from this to make medicines available to people as quickly as possible?
So not only are you a strong advocate for growth in general, but you're a huge advocate for change, obviously, in the business, as you've just spoke about. But you're also a huge, huge advocate for women's leadership. And you actually are the co-founder of WLP, Women Leaders in Pharma, which is based in Montreal, now in Toronto, and probably in the States, which grew. But the mindset which you created, that you co-founded that that organism, is with what intention?
So it's very much to the intention of probably where we started our discussion about people really reaching their full potential. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because for most of my career, I never really felt like there was a rift between women and men in general, and certainly never felt like I was underprivileged or that I didn't have the same opportunities. But I also realized as I sort of reached new levels within the organization that there were less and less women around me. And so I guess that perception started to change at a certain point, that I didn't feel like there was that we had any less opportunities, but it does beg the question, then why are there less women in the types of positions that I'm in or in the meetings that I'm in? And I was most struck when I became general manager and I attended a national conference, and I was invited to be a speaker, and there were 23 of us who were general managers of different types of companies all across pharma. And it hit me on panel two that all these panelists looked exactly the same. You know, they were all middle-aged white men, basically wearing white or blue shirts. And after the third panel of eight that all looked the same, and I showed up in a dress, my initial instinct was to be a little bit nervous, sort of thinking I hadn't really experienced that. But I quickly used it to feel like it was empowering and thinking, well, this doesn't make a lot of sense. So how do I make sure? It really got me thinking, why am I the only woman in a day of 23 people? Why would I be the only woman general manager here? And that just spun a whole lot of thinking between myself, between colleagues, with my family, and I met a number of women who sort of felt the same. And the more I asked questions, the more I realized how other people's perceptions were perhaps different than mine. And people did see a glass ceiling there that perhaps I hadn't really looked at. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized that we needed to support each other and to really talk about the real issues that we're holding. And I think that we have to start within ourselves to look at what ceiling that is. And sometimes it's an internal ceiling, and sometimes it's a ceiling that's imposed by others. I think we have to start inside first, because I do think that there's that internal ceiling first. And so a lot of our discussions just started with how to empower ourselves and each other, how to raise each other up so that we're, you know, we hear from each other, and how do we make sure that we put women on pedestals so that we can hear more voices? Because ultimately, I think within pharma in particular, you know, that's the particular interest of women leaders in pharma, is I do think that people end up better served, and we serve our patients better if there's a balanced voice that's at the leadership level. And it started, it's interesting because it just, it caught on like wildfire. There were a lot of women that felt that way and all of a sudden felt like they were finally being heard. And I think that it's a step. It's a step in the right direction. But I think ultimately what we're going to need to do is think of what are the actions as companies that we can take as well to make sure that we're really creating inclusive environments. Again, I feel fortunate to work at GSK. You know, we have some incredible women leaders who provide great examples. I realize that after conversations through women leaders in pharma, that that's not the case everywhere. But I had the privilege of working at Veeve Healthcare, where our CEO was a woman, and now at GSK. And we have many very strong female leaders within the company. And I think that the more we see that and the more that we're able to help people believe that they can do it too without compromising the things that are important to them, the better off we are. But we need to start that conversation because it's not the case everywhere, certainly not within pharma.
And if I'm not mistaken, Emma has 4 kids.
She does.
To your point, without having to compromise on other aspects of their life is what I'm hearing from you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's towards the end. I feel like we could go on and on. Maybe it's a sequel, Sarah, we'll see. But before we leave, I'd like to ask you what I call my 1-minute questions, which you only have a couple of seconds or minutes to answer those. And it's really to provide tips, really practical as much as possible. But before we start there, what's your USC? How would you describe your unique strategic contribution right now in your role? You already said some elements of it in terms of the impact you're going to have with the pandemic. But what's your USC as a leader within your role right now?
So I think that my USC probably hasn't necessarily changed in this role. I think generally what I bring to a team is the ability to distill a lot of information and to set a very clear direction in terms of where we need to go and inspire people to go in that direction.
What's your one tip to empower your team?
To make them believe in what we're doing, help them understand the impact of their work.
So going back to the vision, the where and the why we're doing this.
And the fact that their work actually makes a difference.
Because I always say everybody is waking up in the morning wanting to make that a difference, whatever that difference is to you. People wake up wanting to know that their work they're doing really makes a difference, or else why would we do it?
Exactly.
And that as a leader, you're bringing light to that. As leaders, we need to help people see that so that they can feel that satisfaction. They can feel that ignition, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your one piece of advice to a leader who wants to raise their game?
Just do it.
Love it.
I think you know, if you want to do something, you can do it. It's just about I think deep down we know how to do that, and it's about not taking any excuses and just going out and doing it. If you probably know the answers.
Yeah, you already have it in you. Just tap into that. Yeah. If you had to summarize leadership in 3 words, what would they be?
Connecting, strength, and direction, and a way to bring people together, sort of element of unification as well.
Thank you so much for this. Thank you. I so appreciate getting to connect with you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. It was great to see you. Clearly, we need to speak more often.
And it was not that long ago that you and I spoke, but obviously you had the chance to, to change your job for a fantastic role. Go on and save the world.
The world now, changing quickly.
Yeah, but go on and save the world, Sarah. We need you and all of your team.
I'll do my best.
Thank you so
much. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks for listening to this Empower Your Team podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it and can take away powerful tools and ideas. For more free content, events, and development tools, visit our website at empoweryourteam.com or on our LinkedIn or Facebook pages. And be sure to sign up for our newsletter to continue receiving Empower Your Team content and insights.